On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Isn't being articulate and good at arguing your point a little piece of the jockey skill set?
There has to be massive concern about the depth of the weight for age horses, and to have two recent winners at 100-1.
I know trainers who will tell you that a late maturing, well looked after horse at 8 or 9 who's had 40 starts can be at the peak of their power.
We need Australian horses to at least be
competitive. Well, he's a colt, so I don't know how long we'll get to see him racing.
Compare what Winx was beating to the Enable Crystal Ocean stouches up the straight at York and stuff. There's just no comparison.
Isn't that the whole wider issue here, that the whole group race pattern really needs to be looked at, that there are just way too many?
Then Sunday came. Cranbourne Cup Day. What a graveyard that was.
Oh, I wonder if it was a graveyard for Matty Stewart on the weekend. Hoping some punters had a win out there on the weekend, because it was certainly brilliant racing all around Australia, from Caulfield to Royal Randwick. We got to see some amazing international racing over the weekend as well, which we'll discuss. Champions Day over in the UK. And your great old mate, Beauty Generation, Bubble Boy. The bubble burst.
The pin hit the bubble and the bubble burst. You know, due credit to him for winning the race for the previous 2 years, Bubble Boy, but he's racing in a fishbowl and he couldn't beat the other goldfish, so.
What was your take out of Saturday? And Anthony Mithen, I know what your take out will be. How are you? How have you recovered?
Mickey.
Is Mr. Quickie out yet?
I tell you, it was a character-building week into a character-building weekend. So I took the wife to see Ride Like a Girl last night and cried like a baby. And I think the tears were for just a conglomerate of things. But I love the movie. Yeah, I recommend it to everyone.
There's a fine line between character-building and soul-destroying.
Yeah, that's right. You're not sure what it was. I think I'm still trying to work it out.
He's obviously pulled up well, because you've now started the Mr. Quickie Get in the Cox Plate campaign.
Yes, and we're running it on Twitter shortly. Go to my Twitter handle and RSN and yours, Mickey, and Maddie's going to have a retweet of, you've got a thumb down in the photo we're about to...
He's my first one dumped, I'm afraid. Is this going to be character building or soul destroying?
Do I do this now? How could you possibly say with the...
Well, maybe
with
not the,
with
first
the lack,
one, but he's a dumpy.
Lack,
he's a dumpy.
With the lack of weight for age horses, up and coming weight for age horses, and you've got... So let me just state this. If you had a horse that had run its last 5 starts in Group 1 company, it had won 1, it's been placed in 2, it's run poorly in 1 with maybe tempo against it, and then been the hard luck story out of a Caulfield Cup beaten 4 lengths, and you don't let it run in a Cox Plate and it's a 4-year-old, you have got to have your head read, Matt. That is an absolute disgrace.
Do you put in the most elite field, you know, in inverted commas, elite field, do you put in horses who have been tempo beaten and unlucky? You're kind of clawing your way with those sort of justifications.
Well, let's forget about that and say he's won a Group 1 race and he's been placed in 2 others out of his last 5 starts, all at Group 1 company. Well, how many other horses in the field would boast that?
He's out for me.
How heavily do you weight those?
That just doesn't make any sense.
Those Sorry, he's ones. Out. Sorry.
Well, okay, we'll do this now.
Well, would you dump him, Felgate, or would you put him
I've got to say, Mitho, I'm sorry, he would be on my outside list. Liskershire is guaranteed. Kluger's guaranteed. So we've got Dancer Tira, Holmesman, Cape of Good Hope and Harlem. So they are the exempt ballot ones. So 1, 2, 3, there's 6 of those. Avilius is a must. Mystic Journey is a must. I think Blackheart Bart on what he's done this time in is a must. So there's 9.
I'd chuck him as well.
Kings Will Dream, he has to go in. So there's 10. Now, the question marks there are then Magic Wand, who has got form behind Magical, who won the Group 1 over the weekend. I think that gets Magic Wand in, and they want an Aidan O'Brien runner.
Dump it.
Very elegant. There's a question mark for mine. Now, 3-year-old Castelvecchio, there's a question mark. But do they want the 3-year-old in there? Tiakau Shark hasn't won a Group 1. I'd put him in it for the X factor, the Shark X factor. And then you've got Humidor's been placed in the last 2 Cox Plates. I think he's got to get a run. Then you've got Galo Shop, Dreamcastle. I would get rid of both of those. So I've got you on the precipice with Castelvecchio.
I'd make a case for Galo Shop almost on the Humidor argument. You know, there was that season before he broke down.
He was disappointing last start. Humidor was a building improving run last start.
Yeah, but I think you could make a nearly an equal case for both on proven CVs, state of career, state of life, all that sort of stuff. Big name factor.
Placings in the last two Cox plates, including running Winks to a closest margin. I think that gets him in.
Yeah, but you take away Humidor's Cox plate performances and Galo Shop's overall performances, pound for pound against Humidor, outweigh him.
Mytho, so, who would you kick out to make way for Mr. Quickie?
Well, I can't have the Shark in. I mean, if there are horses there that have outperformed you so far, forget X Factor. That horse deserves to be there. Five Group 1 starts. His last five, he's won one and been placed in two others. And that's not X Factor? You've got to be kidding me.
What about?
You have to be kidding me.
Well, what about the three-year-old Castle Vecchio? Would you have him in?
No, I wouldn't.
No,
I
don't.
He's a Group 1 winner?
No, well, as a two-year-old. I mean,
you're a three-year-old Group 1 winner.
Yeah, but he hasn't come up at three in the spring and done enough for mine. I mean, if he was the...
You're putting a bit of mayonnaise on three-year-old fringe derby form, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. You're justifying it to get him in the race, aren't you?
Well, what can you do? I mean, Val Declare, who the horse that he beat in the derby, is our second favourite for the Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, but that's 3,200
metres.
3,200 metres.
But we've also not got a real depth of weight for age horses. So if, you know, it's a toss-up between going to the Melbourne Cup Cox Plate, I would have thought that the the Moonee Valley Racing Club would be really pleased to have us choose the Cox Plate, not the Melbourne Cup.
Well, that's true too. But just as a backdrop to this conversation, obviously the nature of this conversation suggests that there are a lot that the Moonee Valley Racing Club have to think about. And I was just talking to Michael Browell about the conundrum of this year and what it might mean for next year. They might dump the five winning your in races next year. They've got bonuses across 13 races that cross over winning you're in. If the bonus isn't good enough, why give them the extra guarantee and then clutter a congested race up with horses that are guaranteed starts that if you had your time again, you'd probably chuck them out. So yeah, Next year they might chuck them out.
I don't think they'd have Harlem, even though he ran well last time. I don't think they'd have Harlem in the Cox.
No, Harlem's a Moonee Valley Cup horse at best.
Now, is there a chance, though, that the meeting tomorrow, the committee decide the final field, could they kick out one that has won that? Do they have the final say?
That is the question mark about whose power is greatest. Is it the power of the five winning your in races? Is it an absolute lock? I was just talking to Michael Brown before, and I said, well, how powerful is the discretion of the club? Can it override a winning your in? And he said, I've got a feeling it's open for interpretation almost, he said. So he's basically the message was, if Harlem hadn't run a bit of a flashing light last start, the view may have been that despite the winning you're in, they may still have been able to chuck him out, which is an unusual interpretation, but that's the way it was.
Pardon my ignorance on this one and a question without notice, but what do the ratings tell us? Like if you just run the field, the top 14 on a rating scale, weight for age, this is what the field looks like, and unfortunately number 15 is X, but it doesn't rate as highly as X, who's 14. Do we know what that looks like?
No, I haven't got my head around it. If it was a ratings-based selection
like
process.
A normal weight for age race at a normal club.
Yeah,
without,
but that would have chucked out So
else.
You Think and all well, that as well, wouldn't
this
it?
Is what,
you know, in his first year. So it's I'm not. I like the sexy factor. Well, I like Michael, the sexy vote. That's why I'm justifying a Tiago Shark.
Michael Browell in The Australian Today is quoted as saying, the main criteria for the 9-member Moonee Valley Racing Club committee is strong Group 1 form over 1,600 metres to 2,000, so that doesn't bode well for Mr. Quickie in the previous year, and also whether a horse has the X factor. He said the committee will also vote on the order of the four emergencies. So your Group 1 form is further than 2,000.
Yeah, it's 2,400. Mm. Yeah. Well, despite you're ignoring the fact that he ran third in the Maccabi Diva.
No, not ignoring that, but I'm saying you're winning Group 1 form. You're winning Group 1 form.
Yeah.
Would you have yourself above Very Elegant?
If the ratings tell us that way, I wished I'd brought the ratings in. I'm scrambling for them now, but and Racing Australia don't have them up on the Cox Plate, unfortunately. Yep. But I think they will certainly look at that pretty closely at what horse actually rates right now on its current form. What horse rates higher than the other, and that therein might lie the answer. We can talk as much as we like, and we can talk about X Factor, and you can have Glenn Boss ringing us yesterday saying, I've just watched the Caulfield Cup. Oh, my God, I want to ride Mr. Quickie in the Cox Plate. He had flashing lights all over him, and I will get off a full book of rides in Sydney, including a favourite in a $1 million race, to come down and ride him in a Cox Plate. Now, if that's not a push enough for a bloke that knows a thing or two about the Cox Plate, I'll go he. So you talk about X Factor. I reckon Glenn Boss has got a bit of it.
Yeah.
And I reckon he knows what it looks like. And I trust his judgment above any of us put together.
Had you planned to run in the Cox Plate before Bossy made that call?
It was certainly a discussion on Saturday night, and it was the way I felt. No decisions on race day, and you get sick of that when you're an owner and you want to know where you're going next. But I got a really strong sense that that's what Philip Stokes wanted to do on Saturday night, talking to him an hour after the race.
Now, just on Bossy, were you not happy with John Allen on Saturday? Is that the change of rider?
No, I've agonised over this.
He'd been on the edge of the cliff for a few rides, Jay Allen, hadn't he?
I spent half an hour talking to my wife about this last night, feeling very sorry for John Allen because he wasted so hard to get down to 53. I had a good chat to him after the race. He was devastated at the bad luck. And I had to pat him on the back and say, mate, there was nothing you did that I saw that you could have changed. It was a barrier attendant that grabbed at a rein.
What the issue was at the start?
Look, I think that put him off. I don't want to blame the barrier attendant either. We had a good look at the vision afterwards, and it looked as though that played some part. I don't think he was necessarily impeded from, but he was distracted from the start after being a bit fractious. So the horse has to take the blame. So we blame the horse there. John then does the right thing and heads straight down to the rail and tries to save as much ground as possible. Waits and waits and waits because you can't miss the kick in a Caulfield Cup by three and come around every runner at the 800 and go past them like they're C graders. So he did all the right things. All he needed was that split to open up, which invariably does. 8 times out of 10, it does. It didn't open up, and he wrenched him to the outside, and we all saw the flashing light finish, beaten 4 lengths.
Where do you think he should have finished?
I think he would have been fighting out the finish. I really do. I mean, Murderglass was outstanding, but I think if we had been making our run at the same time with the turbo boost that he gave us when he got into clear air, if we'd put that turbo boost on 400 metres earlier or 300 metres earlier like Murderglass, I think we come with that horse into the race and potentially, you know, it's a ding-dong battle to the line.
Speaking of jockeys on the wrong end of things, Luke Nolan... He was dumped, basically. And I had a chat to Luke. He's obviously being very professional about it, but I said, was it a question of getting down to 52 for Constantinople, who was one of the other flashing light runs? He said, no, I could have made that weight, but so it was clearly a case of being replaced. And he basically said, look, I drew in, and there's, you know, the old analogy, they're not chess pieces. You know, once the die is cast, you know, you're at the whim of the way the race unfolds, aren't you? And Luke was unlucky on Constantinople, and he's been replaced by everybody's favourite jockey now, Glenn Boss.
it's a bloody stiff call for Luke Nolan. But you can see, if you're one of the connections of that horse, with the form that Glenn Boss is in, the form that he's got in these major races, it's a hard one to ignore, isn't it? What do you say, Mitho? Because he was probably a victim of circumstances.
Look, total victim of circumstances. That's the point.
I referenced my wife too many times this morning. We must have fallen in love on the weekend. But she said to me, when you're talking high level stakes, when you're this is the very peak of racing. Glenn Boss couldn't give a stuff about another jockey. Those high end jockeys. Mm. Actually, we were talking about it because Damien Oliver wasn't portrayed that well in Ride Like a Girl. He was the villain jockey that was out there just for himself to ride winners. And perhaps we've got to all accept that.
What a terrible betrayal!
Exactly. That's what happens. That is they're not all there to be good blokes and rub shoulders and be best mates with the guy they're sitting next to in the jockey room.
Well, there's a lot of money at stake.
Correct. It's a professional environment that they're in, and they're out for their own profession. They're their own business. So I think that it's unfortunate for jockeys like Luke and John and Glenn Boss, good on him. He's got on the front foot and he's lobbed himself into two very smart rides if we're allowed to run. Now, my very helpful brother has texted me, Mr. Quickie's rating's 108, Very Elegant is 106, so that probably has Mr. Quickie above Very Elegant. And Tiakau Shark, interestingly, is also 108.
Mm.
So that might come down to a committee decision.
Did your brother send the full list of ratings?
No, he hasn't.
Through?
We might ask him to.
Come on, lift.
But the thing that amazed me about Saturday, forgetting all the little hard luck stories, was the absolute dominance of the winner.
That's what I want to get onto now. And could this just be a year at the Japanese? Because this is a little snippet that we had on Saturday morning when we were talking to...
our good mate Ando.
Ando, who is a former jockey. He is closely embedded with Northern Farm. He's also a media commentator over there. He has helped out with the form of all the international jockeys. Now, we were talking about Murder Glace on Saturday, and also then the comparison to Liz Grischer coming up in the Cox Plate on Saturday. Oh, we've got some audio. PJ10 is what we're looking for here. In the technical terms, is what we want to be running.
Finishing the finishing stages of the Caulfield Cup, I think.
We're going to have a listen to this grab first of what Ando had to say on Sunday morning.
Michael, Peter and I are very, very important people in Australia, and we would love one day to see a Japan Cup live. So whatever you can do for us important people here, Josh would be very thankful.
So the bosses at RSN, we need some budget.
And the most important thing from Matt's perspective is that it is free to travel there.
You know, I'll just go wait until next week. All your money bet on the Liz Grischer.
That was
then you make money.
That was my last question.
Did you know that the Monopoly game at Macca's is still making winners? 1 in 5 peelers, to be exact. But you better hurry. It's your last chance to peel, play and win at Macca's. Ends 29/10/19. Visit maccasplayer.com.au for full terms.
Not only do you get a free chip on Liz Grischer, but you get a Big Mac with it as well. Chips in is what he's saying. And we came out a few hours later and see Murder Glass just put away the Caulfield Cup field.
Look, it's a bit scary, isn't it? And we've known that the Japanese middle distance stayers have been a cut above, and they've been bred over decades and centuries to get to this point of their being that they're just better, you know. And we've known it, we've seen it, but we still like to think that maybe home ground advantage is a thing. And do they travel? I heard one of your interviews earlier might have been David Hayes suggesting that, you know, that perhaps the only thing that can beat the Japanese on Saturday is just not settling, not travelling and settling in, and that might be right. So you're betting to that, Matty.
Well, that's right. You know, the history of the Japanese dominance started with one horse about 30 years ago, and it was Sunday Silence. They had this thing about grabbing every American derby winner, and Sunday Silence was the one that they took over. It would have been in the 80s, I reckon, Sunday Silence, Mytho, and
yep.
The effect that he had right through the pedigrees that now dominate staying ranks and when they come here and their big races over there. So you can almost trace this incredible story of Japanese dominance back to one horse and one purchase 30 years ago.
It's interesting because what we had at that time was Dane Hill in Australia. And Dane Hill provided was such a speed source that has then gone on to provide a whole family tree of speed sources in Australia. And we now have a reputation around the world as being the best speedsters. Yeah. Well, Japan, we've got a hats off to Sunday Silence for the job he's done for the stayers.
We're going to wait in about an hour or two to find out what cup penalty, if any, Murder Glass should get. How much should it get? And can he do a cups double? Can he win over 3,200?
Oh, again, you'd have to look at history. Off the top of my head, I'd say kilo. Does that sound about right for Murder Glass, Matty?
Yeah, I'd give him more.
Would you?
I'm sure Paul Pruska would give him more.
Yeah. It was a dominant win. He was the horse that was going to win from about 500 out. I know there were hard luck stories behind the race, but he was just travelling so beautifully.
What did he carry on Saturday?
55.5.
And what's his weight in the Melbourne Cup? Because that is obviously...
Hard to take him up to...
It's probably a half, maybe a kilo, because he'd be weighted up to his very best anyway by Greg.
And there
Carpenter,
is the second wave to come that he has to meet. It's not like it's a replication of the Caulfield Cup field, so there is that to be factored into it. Actually, funny enough, I spoke to Paul Pruska this morning about, well, what do you think after seeing that on Saturday? He said, no, still happy.
Well, you'd have to be when the Vow and Declares are running so well, the Mr. Quickies are unlucky. The local form... staying form is standing up at this point in time against the internationals.
There does look to be a new wave of stayers coming through, doesn't there? In Vow and Declare, and I'll throw Mr. Quickie in there if no one else will. So I think that's a healthy state of being, and hopefully we can produce our own. He's Mr. Quickie, Victorian bred, of course, down at our place, and Vow and Declare, I think, might even be Queensland bred. So hats off to the breeders.
And we'll get to see more of that form on Wednesday in the Geelong Cup. Steel Prince going to the Geelong Cup on Wednesday. So
Prince
be,
Aaron, yep.
And Prince of Aaron. It'll be interesting to get that tie in as well. Just on the Caulfield Cup, how strong a reference will it be for this year's Melbourne Cup? A lot of flashing light runs in the race, a lot of unlucky runs. How strong is it?
Well, the betting market seems to think that it's going to be really significant, but that's just the knee-jerk, isn't it, Mytho? Yeah. And you've still got Marmello and Cross Counter and all these ones out there. So just a quick snapshot of the betting to give us an indication. You've got Constantinople, flashing light, dump the jockey. Murder Glace and Surprise Baby on the next line. So there's still a strong non-Caulfield Cup element there. But then you go back to Finch. Then you got at $11 and out to $15, Cross Counter Marmello, who are going to come out of Werribee. And then you got a stack of Werribees in the market as well. But there's one or two from the Geelong Cup that are also littered through at the top four or five lines of betting for the Melbourne Cup. So...
well, quick run through on the runners. I thought Finch was huge. Didn't have much luck.
I'm surprised that he's as generous odds as that Finch, because I think he just looks like a Flemington horse.
He should have come out of the Caulfield Cup as still the favourite.
Yeah, I tend to agree, because we all thought, and exactly what happened, he was going to struggle to get around Caulfield with his big frame, and he did a titanic job to do that. So I would have had him as a flashing light horse.
Mustagir Mirage Dancer, they were both good runs.
Yeah,
I
good
thought.
Runs. Yeah.
And Constantinople was unlucky as well. Is there anything else that you'd want to take moving out of the Caulfield Cup?
Not me. I'm just with Mytho on Finch.
Well, Vaughan Declare in second. He didn't lose any admirers. Yeah. He was
still
going
to beat the ballot.
Well, that's a question, isn't it? I think he's about 31 in order. You'd think with natural attrition he'd be fine, but he's not in the field as we speak right now.
But I was watching Finch Parade. He, to me, looked like Manicato's brother. He's just this monster, and he's reaching his high action, and the way he settled a little bit with cover wide, but mainly not. I thought, gee, of all the ones I wanted to drag out of that race and take to Flemington, Finch is the one.
Yeah.
SMS is 0416 90 50 52. Plenty coming through. Don't forget, we've got the Antler Luggage Championship moment of the weekend. What you think was the best performance of the weekend. And Mytho, a few SMSs coming through for you. Tell Mytho, if Mr. Quickie struggled with luck to get around Caulfield, he'd have no chance in the Valley. That's even harder. Tell him to take off his owner's hat, and if luck isn't on your side,
wasn't getting around Caulfield,
you don't get
running into traffic. That was the problem.
Yeah. I don't think he didn't handle the track. He's won a couple there previously and handled it fine.
Agree. Ratings are more important than X factor in the committee.
Well, just on that,
prejudices.
Castle Vecchio is 102 as opposed to Mr. Quickie's 108 rating, and Tiaka Sharks 108 and very elegant 106.
Okay, I like that. Mytho, you need a Valium. You're so conflicted, and Boss is the greatest self promoter in Australia.
God bless him,
Mr. Quickie.
By the way, I didn't deny any of that.
Okay. Mr. Quickie's an out-and-out backmarker. 90% of winners of the Cox Plate are on speed or handy. He's a no for me. No response?
Glenn Boss seemed to have circumnavigate the field. Eight wide, came from back, and got the job done on Maccabi Diva.
Holmesman's in the Cox Plate. Is that correct? Yes, Holmesman is guaranteed. Another one here saying, just go to the Cup, Mytho. You'll win it. The Shark should get a run. Is there Melbourne Cup off the agenda?
I can only take my lead from Peter Moody, who's done this a few more times than I have, and he suggested if we run in the Cox Plate, don't springboard into the Melbourne Cup. That'll do him for now. It's a high-pressure, high-intensity race. Don't think that you can have your blowout run for a Melbourne Cup in a Cox Plate. If we wanted to go that way, we would go Moonee Valley Cup.
What amazes me is that everyone focuses on... There's so much prize money and so much spread and so many races one level down, only half a level down from these. Look, my view on Mr. Quickie would be you'd freshen up and have a crack at the $2 million Cantala. That would be the absolute, to me, sensible way to go. But there's this obsession
Cantala
always
Cantala or the Emirates? The mile or
the
2,000?
The mile, sorry. Okay. The mile. Yeah, freshen him up for the mile.
I'm going to take a break in a moment. Before we do, we've got to talk about the Everest,
which
but also
which?
Outside of that. There's going to be an interesting decision for Kieran Murray and Connections. Thought of that, which was just so dominant.
Cool.
Do you go to the Derby when he's a colt, or do you go to the McKinnon? Because a win in the McKinnon would be worth a hell of a lot more than a Derby from a breeding perspective. You're a breeder, Mytho.
Yeah, I mean, the Derby winners traditionally don't have a great traction with the breeders in this country. We own a good chunk of Tarzino, who won the VRC Derby, and at the time everyone thought, oh, they bought in and going to stand the horse in Victoria down at our farm at Rosemont. We elected to send him to New Zealand, even though we own a third of him, because that was the place for him. So I can see what Connections are thinking. Let's, you know, sometimes it's almost like a stain if you're a colt on your CV that you've won a Derby. So it is tricky. There've been horses that have got over that subsequently. Starcraft, another boy of ours, won an AJC Derby, but he proved himself to be a world-class miler later in his career. But it took almost all of that to happen.
If the Derby was at 2,000 metres, we wouldn't be having this discussion, would be.
I'd
still
sit on the fence on that call. Yeah, I like the tradition of it, but the commercial reality is maybe in the spring we need a 2,000 metre Derby.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to The Verdict. Keep the SMSs coming through. On the other side, we're going to talk about the Everest. Yes, yes, yes. And still to come, we'll speak to Giles Thompson, the CEO of Racing Victoria, about the 7:30 report. What does the industry need to do? What is the fallout? And what does the future hold? Welcome back to The Verdict. What a big weekend it was. We had the Caulfield Cup and then the Everest in Sydney. What a phenomenal performance. Yes, yes, yes. Winning the three-year-old colt. You're a breeder. Some figures have been bandied about are absolutely astronomical, $40 million, $50 million. Can you put a figure on what that colt's now worth?
It is quite tricky because you need a Group 1 victory to have that sort of that, on your CV. But does the Everest just transcend that and put itself there anyway as a $14 million race? Probably.
Breaking the track record, well, beating the best sprinters.
Yeah, State Bickering has seen that status denied that race.
And just as a breeder myth, though, everyone says, oh, you need black type and you need Group 1 status or else the whole breeding thing doesn't really work out. But as you just suggested then, it's such a high-profile race, the high-profile form of all the Group 1 runners he was up against. Does it matter to Yes, Yes, Yes that it wasn't a Group 1? Is he still worth $40 million anyway?
I think probably. Yeah. I tell you what his worth depends on, what breeders will pay to use him for a service. And right now, being an Everest winner, a Todman winner, performance in
he'd
the Golden Slipper...
He'd be 50,000 first season,
he'd be 50,000 or 60,000, yep. Which puts him... Look, I don't think it's as high as 50, to be honest. I think it's probably more like 25 or 30. Okay. Merchant Navy went off to stud on a $27 million deal after winning the Coolmore, and he stood his first season at 50, I reckon. Mm. So that gives you your valuation.
Does he need to come back and win a Coolmore to gold plate?
If he does that, he might stand at 80,000. Yeah. And then you're starting.
There's a ceiling, though, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there is now. I mean, we've gone past those heady days of stallions going to stud, standing for 150, 200 a pop, first cab off the rank. So you've got to build your way to that now, which is far more appropriate. I think those heady days where money was easy in our game and in other games and people were making money easy and bringing it to racing and throwing it around, that's probably what caused that inflated stallion market. But it has settled and eased now, and it's become that 25 to 30 million is your top range first season stallion these days.
It's funny though, isn't it, how one win can give you megastar status, because there was nothing about Yes, Yes, Yes to me that had him as anything other than one of the nicer colts.
Yeah.
He was just one of the nicer colts, wasn't he? Like he was Bivouac and all. They're all about the same. The Hawks one as well. So it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, suddenly you leap into the stratosphere off the back of what was a fantastic win, but there was nothing going
into... Would Godolphin be ruining not running Bivouac?
I don't think so. They'll have their eyes on the prize this weekend in the Manukau.
We should just win the Manukau, shouldn't we?
Yeah, and it is a bit of a strange program. I find that one interesting because he should be $2 favourite for the Coolmore if that's the way he's going. But to then back him up a week later into the Coolmore is asking a bit of the colt, and I assume that's what they're going to do.
Or do they just get the Group 1 in the Manukau and job
put
done?
Put him to the paddock. That may be their plan. I'm not sure.
But the good thing about Bivouac, and this is again with Arcadia Queen, I spoke to Bob Peters before, that what the problem that the Everest presents is the irresistibility of it.
Yes.
Is that in the normal circumstances, you wouldn't be setting horses on these Everest
Did he
programs.
Think he pulled the wrong rein? Well, she should have gone to a Cox Plate, not an Everest.
He didn't quite want to answer that question when I put it to him, you know, but he did say it's a very big target when you're trying to win an Everest and a Golden Eagle, you know, as well in the same campaign. So I think the problem with the Everest, you know, one of the little problems with the Everest is the carrot is so big that you can't avoid it, but if common sense prevailed, sometimes you probably wouldn't go there.
Was he trying to turn horses into something they weren't because of what was at stake?
And you can break a horse by doing that, can't you? You know better than anyone. You can break a horse by going in the absolute wrong direction in a race one in a tick over 1.7 when you're sitting two lengths off them. It remains to be seen whether Arcadia Queen will come out of that race worse off.
Yeah. So she's no guarantee to go to the Golden Eagle.
They're going to have a squeeze at her for the next two or three days. First signs are that she's come out of it all right, but she got scorched in that race.
Yeah. She was really closer than what I thought she would be too.
And it can be heartbreaking for a horse, like it can for a human when you have weeks like we all had in the industry last week, and then you're copping up a cut like Mr. Quickie did in the Caulfield Cup. You can be pretty despondent for a while, and that horses do the same thing.
Mm. What did we make of, we were all at Caulfield, Everest Caulfield Cup on the same day. There's the the money turnover, the tab betting, and all the corporate betting will be revealed in the next 24 hours or so. But there's been some interesting reports about where it sits. What did you think? Cup Everest on the same day?
It was just a great taste racing. And the sooner we all come together and acknowledge that and move forward, and our administrators do that and stop bashing each other around the ear, maybe we've got an industry to be proud of rather than one. I mean, it's becoming, like, I take no interest in our federal politics because I can't stand the way they behave. And I think most Australians share that view. I'm starting to get a little bit that way with our administrators and the toing and froing and the mudslinging that goes on. It was a great day's racing. Can't we just celebrate that as a racing nation that stops for a race every November on a Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah, I still believe in the basic idea that all eggs in one basket at absolute prime times a year and best versus best. I still believe that that's what any sport should be about. That's what Wimbledon's about. It's what, you know, all the great sporting tournaments are about. When you have your super duper proven historically and all that sort of stuff, elite days, they should have clear air. I strongly, it's just a basic belief, you know, that justifies every grand final sport. So I don't like the fact that Chris Waller wasn't there. I didn't like, you know, like, and if Volandis is, I keep going on about this, if he's so determined to make an impact and so determined to keep saying, I'm not trying to destroy Melbourne, I'm just trying to do what's best for Sydney, he still has November to run on Everest and it would still be a massive race. So,
did you make of Michael Brow's comments? Because the Manukato has suffered. It will be a below, not substandard, but a below what quality they could have got without the Everest,
better.
And then they've also put the bonus linking for any horse to run in the Everest to try and keep the sprinters in Sydney.
And all of that is nasty point scoring by our state leaders, which also highlights the fact, why don't we have a national body that's got some clout rather than sort of Racing Australia that sort of seems to be an administrative body that does a bit of paper pushing, but that's about all they do. And I'm not sure after last week's 7:30 report they're doing a particularly good job of it, given the traceability of racehorses. But
well,
I'll get to that in a minute.
I was going to say, we're going to have a chat to Giles Thompson, but Mytho, you are a horse lover, and you're at the heart, really, because you're a breeder as well. So the traceability of horses, following on from the 7:30 report, and the welfare of the animal after they finish their racing career is front and centre for everyone, not just in the racing industry, every single person after that 7:30 report last Thursday night. Now, you've written something that you want to get off your chest, that you want to say?
I just wanted to get it right, rather than come in here and waffle on. And if you can bear with me, Michael and Matty, I felt it was right. I haven't really made any sort of statement, being one of the bigger breeders in Victoria. I thought this was probably a good forum. And I start by saying that racing needed a good weekend on the track because we had a terrible one off it. There was no doubt about that. We love our animals. We put them before most other things in life. We're dedicated to them. When I say we, I mean almost everyone who earns a buck out of racing that comes into touch with horses. And that's a lot of people. As an employer, the racing game is in the top five by numbers in this country. That is fact. Top five in this country. It's important to so many people, which is why we're all horrified on Thursday night watching the ABC report. But saying we love our horses isn't enough. Shifting the blame to rogue abattoirs isn't enough. Pointing the finger at other states isn't enough. Although I can see why some finger pointing has been done. I felt Peter Volandis needs to go to the room of mirrors, to be honest, and have a good hard look at himself, not others. It was always folly to go from 0 to 100 in 1 millisecond by outlawing the sending of racehorses to the Knackery in New South Wales. It was a showboat moment and said, we're doing more than you. All bluff and bluster and look at me and how bad a job is everyone else doing. Well, Pete, I reckon you need to double your efforts. Instead, you took on running a whole other sport. And the racing industry let him take on that job at the NRL as chairman. Just beyond belief. What any good organisation would do is inspect what they expect. If you expect no racehorses to go to the Knackery, inspect it. No point playing the wasn't us game after the fact, which was exactly what he did. The Racing New South Wales statement on Friday was a disgrace, I thought. Again, all chest beating and look at me and wasn't us and state versus state, these are our rules, not theirs. Our industry is under attack and you want to hurl hand grenades over the border. Really? That's what they wanted to do? For what it's worth, Victoria needs to have done more as well. There's been too little action given the talk. We've been told for the last decade that we need to take horse welfare and rehoming seriously. We being industry participants, breeders and owners. Well, I'm here to tell administrators to get their act together and quickly. Racing Victoria has an $80 million war chest that they need to creak open and spend some serious dollars getting this right. End the petty point scoring, quit your other jobs, and double your efforts to get a national traceability program in place like you've promised, and quickly. The story of the poor lady who tried so desperately to find and save war ends, only to watch on Thursday night that poor horse meet his fate in a dirty kill box, should be enough to make us all cry and administrators come together and work tirelessly in this sport only to make traceability a number one equine welfare priority. From there, we can make a difference. We can rehome appropriately and ensure that horse welfare is not something we speak about but act upon, together as a nation who loves the thoroughbred. Then, and only then, can we stop as a nation in unison to watch a horse race and be truly proud of our sport.
Mitho, I think a lot of people out there, everyone will concur with the words that you have said then, and we can hear the passion, and I can see the passion in your eyes.
It brought people to, it brought me to tears. It cuts you to the core to think that horses that we've spent so much time, effort, energy, emotional investment in, end up like that. That story of that poor lady that tracked down war ends and tried to follow, and the text messages we saw on Facebook posts from her, and she was featured on the project last week. And that, there's so many of those people that want to care for their animals, but there's too many heartless bastards out there that don't want to play the game, don't want the traceability, want to be able to dispose of them as quickly and easily as possible. Well, we need to stop that.
Giles Thompson, the CEO of Racing Victoria, joins us on the line. Giles, you were listening to Mitho's statement there, and it's been a tough few days for everyone in racing. Firstly, your response to what Anthony's got to say, and also, what does Racing Victoria, and as Mitho said, all of Australia, because it does, I think, go past state-by-state borders. What do we need to do now?
Morning, Michael. Sorry about that. I didn't catch it all, but I caught enough to understand the thrust of it. Well, the simple fact is that this is something that we are all aware of that needs to happen. I mean, Thursday night was a illustration of what can happen when there's failures in the system. Something we've all been aware of, and there have been actions taken by predecessors of mine and Racing Victoria as well. However, and it's a however that I'm more than happy to accept, is that we need to do more, and we being the industry as a whole, Racing Victoria has a role in that. We have a very clear role in that. We are the central administrator, and our role is to bring together the resources and the stakeholders within that industry, including the breeding industry, to deliver outcomes more broadly across racing. We currently deduct 1% of prize money.
Is that enough, Giles?
I'll get on to that, Michael. Yeah. We currently deduct 1% of prize money. We currently spend nearly double that. We spend currently $3.8 million in equine welfare. That equine welfare investment goes into a broad range of equine welfare initiatives, everything from post-racing initiatives right the way through to detailed veterinary research around limb injury. I understand that this is what we've seen at the moment, what we're discussing at the moment, is a priority for equine welfare, but there are other things we need to also do in equine welfare. I think the question for us is, okay, so if in Victoria we're spending $3.8 million and there's various millions being spent around the country, is that enough? And I think the answer today to that is no, it isn't. The next question is, okay, so how much should we be spending and where should we be spending that money? And I think that's where the opportunity comes out of what we saw last week. So Racing Victoria has an equine welfare strategy that is available online. We launched about 4 months ago and didn't actually get a lot of traction. It didn't get a lot of traction because people were thinking about other things. People are now thinking about this. And the great opportunity is for people to spend the time to go and look at that equine welfare strategy online. It's on Racing Victoria's website. It talks about practical bold steps to take. And it talks about how we're going to take them over a period of time. So it has year one priorities, year two and three priorities. The question for us all today is, how do we accelerate that? How do we accelerate it? And how do we ensure that we invest the right amount of money in it? And that's the opportunity for us to, and this is, I describe it as an opportunity coming out of last Thursday's show, because a lot of that stuff that you'll read in that strategy requires broad action by many different stakeholder groups across the industry. My expectation is that any resistance that may have come to that will be considerably diminished now that this is right in our face. And that is a great opportunity for us to make significant strides. The question also comes, how much money should we be spending on it?
And that's you got 80 million. You got 80 million, Giles, so maybe we just creak open the box, eh?
Yeah, absolutely, Mitho. But there is a whole... Let's be clear about what Racing Victoria's assets are and what its income is.
Yeah, they're horses, mate. They're horses, because it's Racing Victoria.
Mitho, can I just finish?
Sure.
Racing Victoria is a central point of the whole ecosystem of the industry. If the industry deems it sufficient or the right thing to do to invest money into particular areas, then it's possible to do. But let's be clear, it's not basically Victoria's money, this. This is the industry's money. Mm. So, for example, if it became a conversation that actually, you know, rather than deduct 1% of prize money, we should deduct 5% of prize money, I'm happy to have that conversation and happy to divert the resources necessary to do that. But there are choices in how we spend that money, whether it's the 80 million that is in for the industry sustainability fund, or whether it's the day-to-day operating money, the wagering income coming in and spending on prize money. I'm happy to have that debate, and that debate is absolutely what we should be having now. It isn't about finger pointing; it is about working as an industry together. And if the conclusion is we need to deduct X amount more from prize money, or find X amount from somewhere else, then we can do that. We've got the luxury of being able to do that.
Giles, can I just...
Also, final point is, whatever we do and however we spend that money, we don't want to be wasting it. We want to be spending it on effective outcomes or effective actions that will deliver outcomes. And we've got to be careful about that.
Giles, to me, the great difficulty in all this, the greatest challenge, is that thoroughbreds drift in and out of the thoroughbred racing industry. And, you know, horses that are second and third and fourth times moved on and sold in goodwill, at what point does the racing industry's control and monitoring of these horses become weaker and weaker to the point where you inevitably lose track? I mean, you know, say I sell a horse to Mitho who wants to use it for equestrian in good faith. I'm David Pfeiffer. I sell it to Mitho in good faith. David Pfeiffer then sells it to Michael Felgate, who's got a daughter who wants to ride a pony, and then suddenly...
She gets older, suddenly it's costing money, so they give it away down the road.
Exactly. So, Giles, realistically, in a holistic, all-of-life sense, how is it possible for the Thoroughbred Racing Authority to monitor the outcomes of all of these thoroughbreds when they have, at some point, they drift out of the thoroughbred industry and into the horse industry, which is separate?
So this issue illustrates perfectly two things. One is that it can't be fixed overnight, and secondly, that actually there are opportunities that we need to work with other people to deliver. And that doesn't mean that we can walk away from it and just simply...
But that's what I'm saying. Isn't it an issue for the horse, in inverted commas, industry, not specifically, not only... I'm not diminishing responsibility for the racing industry here at all, but isn't it an issue for the wider horse industry as well?
Spot on it is. So the need for a national horse registry or registration system is right at the core of all this. So the federal government, the Senate, has been holding inquiries about whether we should have one or not and what it might look like. Racing Australia, on behalf of all of the states around Australia, made submissions to that inquiry earlier in the year. Not a lot has happened since. Clearly, this brings that right to the fore, and I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if suddenly this initiative or this opportunity doesn't gain some momentum, because this is the guts of it, as you say, Matt. What we need here is visibility on horses as they move around the country and as they move around their different parts of their career and who looks after them. We don't have that visibility. We lose sight of a horse the moment it transitions out of racing. So that first transition out whether it's to a leisure, a pursuit, or whether it's to breeding, we can see that, and we can make sure that the data around that is right. But after that, we lose sight of it. But this National Horse Registry would provide the opportunity to use that data. And, for example, a really good opportunity would be, well, if a horse which has retired from racing 5 years down the track, as per what was discussed last week, a horse which has retired 5 years ago is entering a part of the system, like a horse sale, that we can communicate back to the original breeder or the original owner or the original trainer or to Racing Victoria to ensure that a better outcome comes for that horse than what we saw last Thursday. So,
and that's when it becomes an enormous challenge, because it becomes further and further away from your control.
It is an enormous challenge, and it goes away from our control. But because you've got the information and the data, you can use that to get better outcomes.
Yeah, there's microchips, there's brands, there's all those tools that we've got that no one implemented. No one went to the abattoirs and the knackeries and said, we want to know when these horses come back. And that's I think that's a failing.
But non-thoroughbred pleasure horses will also succumb to the same fate.
No, so, I understand that. But we need to look after our own backyard and get it in shape, because we're best placed to do it. We've got the resources and the financial backing to be able to do it, and we can lead from the front in this. But, and then we can worry about the ponies and the paint horses and the other horses that...
And I like the idea with that. And I think one of the interesting conversations I've had in recent days is people who have been involved in cattle tracking systems. And they're really powerful. They're really advanced. And so the technology's there, And I said, okay, so what is the single biggest hurdle to us getting that into a thoroughbred tracking system or more broad horse system? And the biggest hurdle to that is regulation. So it's all very well us going to an abattoir or a knackery and saying, can you tell us all the chips that are coming through? Or going to a horse sale, or a chuka horse sale, and say, can you tell us all the thoroughbred chips that are coming through us? We rely on their goodwill.
Sure.
If the regulation is in place, that they have to tell you, as they do in cattle tracking, they have to record this, they have to show that as it goes, those animals moving through the system, then absolutely, you change the dynamic dramatically. You change the dynamic where actually they have to do it, there is some regulation around that, and then we can leverage off that. It's all very well us going to whichever part of the system of chuka sales or wherever it is and saying...
You've nailed it, but
there's still the wastage element. Say the horse gets to this horse who's on its last legs in life, it's useless, right? That's why it's at this sale. Say the regulation is in place and you go, aha, we've got a thoroughbred here. You cannot take this horse from the abattoir. What then happens to that horse?
No, well, that's to be
that horse is still
honest,
wastage. There's no great outcome for that horse.
No, and this is where New South Wales got it wrong. To go, say 0% of racehorses will end up humanely put to sleep was wrong.
They're still going to die. They're just not going to die as badly.
Matt, there's two things here, and Mitho's spot on with this, and this is why we don't support such a local rule. And there's, firstly, we have to accept anyone involved in any animal husbandry, whether it's rabbits, goats, horses, or whatever it might be, you have to accept there's a legitimate part of that husbandry that there are times that a horse or an animal has to be put down.
Yeah.
Whether it's sick or old or whatever it might be.
Humanely end a life.
Absolutely. And you have to ensure that is done in the humanest possible way, and we didn't see that on Thursday night. You have to accept that.
There's no lily field for all the old discarded horses.
That's the nature of the beast. But also, we have to accept that we have to minimise that. We have to accept that our job within the broader racing industry is to ensure that... and this is the vision for the Racing Victoria Equine Welfare Strategy, is that there is a home for every healthy thoroughbred. And healthy is a key word in that, but there is a healthy home for them. And that's what the Off the Track programme, for example, is about at the moment.
Breeding too many horses, Charles? And this is a question to Mitho as well. Are we breeding too many horses?
Well, I think it's a good question. I think one thing that we've got to... remember...
Well, we're going to fuel night and day racing 7 days a week, so it's a bit of a chicken and the egg.
One thing we have to understand or remember is that over the last 10 years, the number of horses bred in Australia has gone down by about 30%. The number of horses running around in races has gone down 4%. So what's happened is that that issue that you talk about specifically has improved dramatically over 10 years.
Yep.
The question for us today as breeders or racing administrators is what else can we do to improve that? So the breeders, for example, have done a great job in being effective in breeding horses that are more likely to get to the track. Trainers are getting better at training horses that are going to have more extended careers. What we need to understand is what else we can do with that. And there's an active conversation now started with the breeders in Victoria about, okay, what does responsible breeding look like? And that's in its broadest sense. Sorry, Mitha.
And no, Giles, I was just going to say, so I would encourage you to say you've got to make sure that we know what that data looks like. We know how many horses should be bred in Victoria or in Australia, and we get a traceability program in place ASAP, because clearly the cattle industry has beaten us to the punch and doing a far better job of getting all those administrators together and putting a framework around it. You need to go and do that now. You've got some calls to make. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, and Mick Kent's going to write a column for us about the way we're breeding imperfections into our horses that make them more likely to end up in wastage. So
I can cut it together with the other PRAs, and of course this is one area that the PRAs generally are united in trying to get the right outcomes.
Let's get it happening.
On what their process is, but we do need the federal government to put this regulation in place. We don't make the regulation in this space, unfortunately. If we did, we would have put it in. It's the federal government.
Well, hopefully they are listening, because no one could have missed that. Giles, I appreciate your time. This is an issue that needs a lot more discussion and a lot more analysis, but I appreciate you coming on quickly today.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, all.
Giles Thompson. Mitho, we're well and truly out of time, but one quick one before we go. Do you need to put more in? Do the breeders need to put more money in? Are you carrying your own weight?
Look, I think the issue is there is an $80 million pot there, and we sort of ignored that and got back to maybe 5% of prize money needs to come out. And
those top breeders with their gazillion-dollar stallions, should they be ticket be clipped?
Yeah, it's an expensive business to run. Mm. I don't make money. Rosemont is a losing venture. We've got to be trying to win Caulfield Cups and big races for the amount of horses we race. So, all I would say is that there is money there. We need to point it in the right direction. We need to put pressure on all sorts of regulators, including federal government, to make sure that we can work together to make sure that this industry gets it right. Like Giles has told us, the cattle industry. Well, let's do that.
The key message is that not all thoroughbreds are racehorses. They drift in and out of the industry's umbrella, and that's the greatest challenge. And that idea of, you know, the microchipping process and all that is probably the only way to keep proper.
There's no doubt about that. And a quick mention, Edinburgh Park had put out their tweet during the week saying that our brand is our guarantee for life. We will guarantee purchase $1,000 for any of their horses that end up.
Yeah, Ian Smith, well done.
In an abattoir or one of those meat sales. This is a bigger issue than what we've given it, but there is more to be discussed over the coming days and weeks and months on that issue. Boys, before we go, give me a Cox Plate winner, Mitho.
Oh, Mr. Quickie. He's just got to get in the buddy race.
Matty? Well,
given that Mr. Quickie won't get in the race, I'm going with the flavour of the month.
The Japanese. Absolutely. We will be live from Moonee Valley tomorrow. Breakfast with the best. We'll find out if Mr. Quickie and the others get in as